rye whiskey, rye whiskey, I cried. If I don't get rye whiskey, well, I think I may die. I'm gonna go up yonder holler, I'm gonna build me a still, and I'll sell you a gallon for a $5 bill. Well, if the ocean was whiskey and I was a duck, I'd swim to the bottoms and never come up. But the oceans ain't whiskey, and I ain't no duck. So I'll play the Jack of Diamonds and trust to my luck. Jack of Diamonds, no you hold. Drop my poor pockets of silver and gold. Well, it's beefsteak when I'm hungry, rye whiskey when I'm dry, and greenbacks when I'm hard up, in heaven when I die. Rye whiskey, rye whiskey.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. That's country musician Corb Lund. He's on tour now and headed to Hay Camp Brewing tonight in Rapid City. On May 20th, he'll be at Biggs Sports Bar in Sioux Falls. He's won Juno Awards and Canadian Music Awards. Rolling Stone listed him as one of 10 new country artists you need to know. I caught up with him this morning from the road. Corb Lund, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for joining us from the road somewhere.
You bet. Yeah, I'm in Miles City, Montana, east or west of you.
All right. Tell us a little bit. You have a very interesting background with some family history in America and then life in ranching life in Canada. Give us a background of your personal journey, please.
Okay. I'm from Alberta, Canada, southern Alberta, sort of just north of the Montana border, basically. And yeah, my family are all rancher people and rodeo people for many generations. They were in Utah till the turn of the century, both sides of the family, and then they migrated up to southern Alberta around 1898, I think. Lots of cowboy stuff, and I grew up with that kind of thing. And it's
tell us what the landscape what the landscape of where you live right now looks like. You know, what would we recognize there?
It's the foothills of the Rockies. It's sort of right where the prairies meet the foothills of the mountains. It's quite pretty. It's right near Glacier Park, actually, in Montana, just north of the border.
Yeah.
It's quite pretty. The ranch has big mountains that loom over it. It's quite stunning. Cool.
And you haven't been to South Dakota yet? Is that true?
I've been there as a person, but I've never played.
It's
strange because we've played, I think, 45 states, and you'd think that we'd have played South Dakota before now, and I feel like it's long overdue, so I'm happy that we're coming.
All right, so you'll be in Rapid City and Sioux Falls, both sides of the state. Give me an idea why you wanted to put this particular Western Destinations tour together, and what did you have in mind as you planned it?
Well, I've been touring America for years, and the music that I make is it's kind of rough around the edges, kind of country music, underground country or whatever. But a lot of the lyrical themes are pretty Western. It's sort of a lot of it has to do with cowboy stuff and ranching and horses and cattle and mountains and that kind of thing. So the trouble I've had over the years is that I've had a hard time getting booked much in the West, because I think the reason is the booking agents mostly are out of Appalachia in Nashville.
Okay.
And so we've toured a ton in Texas and Oklahoma, which I like, but we've also done a ton of touring in Appalachia, which is okay. But I think maybe the booking agents aren't that familiar with the Western states.
Right.
And for me, it's really important to play there because that's sort of my people. The people understand what I'm singing about, and that's where I'm from personally. So, I sort of went the extra mile to make sure that my new booking agent did a good job of booking us out west, and she has done so.
And you're just getting started on this tour, really. So it's sort of too early to ask about, you know, whether the audiences are responding in a different way. What do you expect? Do you think it's fans are fans wherever you go?
No, it's a little different everywhere I go. Regionally, I mean, as you know, there are a lot of different regions in the States culturally, and it's we play New York City, we play Seattle, we play LA and everything, and we also play the West, and we also play South, and it depends on where we are in terms of who is responding to what. Like we have pretty good fans just about everywhere, but in the West they get a deeper understanding of our lyrical content. Mm-hmm. When we play New York, it's fun because people like the music and they like the they like the flavor of the cowboy songs that I'm singing, but I don't get the idea that they understand all the stuff I'm singing about fully. But
right.
But out west, it's quite, and that's fine. That's okay. That's like when I go see Bruce Springsteen and he's singing about growing up in the New Jersey slums. I didn't grow up with that, so it's not. I like hearing about it, but it's not my thing
right. Personally
that I grew up with. So it's especially fun playing for me in the West because people, understand the.
Yeah, how important?
And
yeah, how important
themes.
Is the story that you're telling? I mean, how important is story to the music that you're writing and the music you're presenting?
For me, it's really important. Most of my songs are story songs to one degree or another. I grew up listening to Marty Robbins and Jerry Reed and Kenny Rogers, and I'm a sucker for story songs. Not all of them are story songs, but a lot of them are.
Yeah. Different themes that you come back to again and again?
Well, yeah, it's pretty wide-ranging. I don't actually have too many love songs.
Right.
So if you take that out of the mix, there's quite a wide opportunity for variety. Like, I don't really get mainstream radio play, so I'm pretty free to write whatever I want. Like, the guys that I know that do, sort of mainstream country are very restricted in what they can write about and what kinds of music they can play. But I'm not. I write whatever I want. And stylistically, too, we draw on all kinds of things. Western swing and bluegrass and rockabilly and old country and folk and 70s country. So it's a big mix. And likewise with the lyrics, I write about a lot of things. But a lot of the backdrop of a lot of the songs is the West.
Right.
Cowboy stuff. And then it doesn't mean every song is about a cowboy theme, but a lot of the time the setting for the story is kind of Western.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's any more important than anybody else's story, but it's my story, so
yeah.
For me it's important.
And I was watching...
Go
ahead.
Sorry. I think regionalism in art is really important.
Really? How come?
Yeah. I mean, well, telling your own story, whether you're a novelist or a singer or a painter, I think it's really important to... The reason I say that is I'm saying that against the backdrop of mainstream music that's sort of homogenous and it's done in Los Angeles and Nashville and pumped out to the world, and it's kind of a homogenous lowest common denominator kind of thing.
Right.
I think in art it's really important to express yourself and things, create art based on your own experience, your own regional culture.
Do you think that the value of regionalism is, for us, so when we're in your audience, we see ourselves reflected in the art that we're experiencing and in the music and in you, or do you think the value of regionalism in art is that people from other places can hear our story and find the universal in it, but also understand who we are and all of us understanding each other better?
Well, it's because of authenticity. Like if you're singing about being from New York City and you're not from New York City, it's not going to ring true. Right?
I see.
So like you touched on it. You said that there's universal truth in art, and the only way to reach that is by being authentic, and that means singing about your own stuff.
Right.
That's how I see it anyway. I think that's it's important to. I think the difference in something to be talked about in music is art versus commerce, right?
Like, right.
In all creative endeavors, but I'm a musician and a songwriter, so that's what I'm talking about. The goals that I have when I write are different than the goals of some of the more mainstream artists, I think, because I think that some of the more mainstream artists, the goal is commercial. Which is fine. I'm not judging. It's just a different goal. My goal is expression, which is kind of the definition of art, really. And so, for me, I'm not trying to be too, this is getting awfully high-minded. At the end of the day, I'm a honky-tonk singer.
Right.
But I mean, it is important to me to sing about things that I know and my own background, because I think that's what connects with people. Because I think people have a pretty good built-in BS detector, and I think they can tell if you're singing fishing songs and you're not from the fishing culture, or if you're singing about LA and you're not from LA, you know, it's, right. I think it's an authenticity thing. It's an honesty thing. And it rings, shines through in the music, I think. I would hope that's the goal anyway.
Yeah. So when we talk about then success, as other people might measure it, with awards and, you know, accolades and, you know, magazine notifications that you're, you know, an up and coming rising star or one of the best ones to watch or what have you, how do you approach then that success? And is that the reward for the authenticity and the work that you're already doing? Or does it risk influencing you when you become noticed on a national stage and you have to sort of figure out how to stay true to who you are?
It's not difficult for me to stay. Yeah. That's the only way I know how to make music. I don't really even know how I would not do it that way. So it's not a problem for me. And all those kind of things that you mentioned are byproducts.
Right.
And that's how art should be. It's even anything in life, really, ideally, if you pursue something that you enjoy, ideally that should be the main pursuit, and making a living from it should be a secondary byproduct.
Yeah. A lot of artists don't get that, though. I mean, a lot of people are out for the, you know, the accolades before, you know, they put one before the other.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think that's why you have commercial pop music and commercial country music and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is it harder or easier now to seek out the authentic? Is it, you know, easier than ever before to sort of find it because you have, you know, contemporary technology and whatnot? Or is it harder to find, you know, authentic artists?
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
It's helpful for sure because people like me have a much more powerful voice now because we can reach our people through social media and the internet. But on the other hand, it's there's a lot more noise. Like, there's a lot more people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It takes, like, I'm kind of on the cusp because I'm old enough that I started my career in a bit more, you know, traditional, using the traditional means, and I've established myself to a degree, and now things have changed. If I was a kid, 22-year-old kid now starting, I'm not sure how that would go because I don't know how you would ever get traction unless you get lucky because there's just so many people making music.
Right.
But
yeah.
I think in the end, that's probably overall on the grand balance sheet a good thing because more people expressing themselves and making art is always good, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk
about making a living. I mean, making a living with art is an eternal question mark. It's always been a major issue with artists is making a living and doing it in a way that doesn't compromise your stuff.
So when did you get to the point where you were, you know, you figured I can make a living at this and I don't have to get, you know, a full-time job somewhere and then try to do this on the side? When was that moment where you're like, yeah, this is the, both things are firing, the expression, the creativity, the artistry, and the commerce that is necessary to sort of fund it and fuel it going forward?
Well, that was the goal from the beginning. And like when I was in my early 20s, I was in a sort of an indie rock band as well.
Yeah.
And that was the goal from the beginning. And I did it. I mean, I had, you know, the odd side job.
Right.
But my career has always been focused on music from my entire adulthood. And I was able to make a living from it in the beginning by scaling down what making a living means.
Right, yeah.
You know, the first 10 years I lived in a van and the band all lived in the same house and we lived on a few hundred bucks a month. And we just decided that the music was important enough that we would sacrifice other creature comforts for the music. So, I was able to do it not by making a ton of money at the beginning, but by reducing my needs. And then as things grew, it's become more sustainable. So my mom's happier now that I'm able to afford a decent lifestyle. So,
you know, you mentioned you mentioned not having, you know, a lot of love songs in your repertoire, but, you know, you do write personal songs about death and other things. How do those songs differ when you sort of present them, you know, to the band or present them to the audience? Is that a different emotional experience for you?
Yeah. I think records and concerts should have an emotional variety to them.
Yeah.
So that's just one of the, you know, colors on the palette.
Right. But for you personally, does it feel different than, you know, a song about whiskey?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, when you've sung it 200 times.
Okay, sure.
You don't like deeply, if you're playing a tour of, you know, for 2 months, you don't fully, you know, experience every song every night, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It comes in waves. It's more of kind of a general thing, but some nights you really feel them. I mean, I don't mean that I don't feel them, but you can't fully go through every emotion that you felt when you wrote the song every night.
I get that. Yeah.
Melt in a puddle. but yeah, I mean, for me, the different moods in songs are different tools to use to create a journey for the audience. And I don't use a set list anymore. I haven't for years. We have 8 records with the material, and I just sort of call audibles all night. So it's kind of fun because it makes it more of a spontaneous show. Every show is different.
Yeah.
I just make it up as I go along.
As I listen,
and, you know, we've got aggressive kind of rocking songs. We've got fun songs. We've got sad songs. We've got some darker songs. So it's kind of there's a certain skill to threading it all together into a sort of a bit of a.
And you can kind of, at this point, you can do that on the fly. I mean, because you know, you're sort of writing that narrative as the show goes on.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like and I change it depending on the mood of the audience and where it's going. And yeah, it's kind of like a cool 90-minute conversation.
Yeah, there you go. That's what we do on this show.
A lot of this I don't talk about that often.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to talk about the artistic side of it. But at the end of the day, it is honky-tonk music, basically.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. To be clear, one of the things as I listen to your music that I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, so tell me if I am. Don't be afraid to hurt my feelings. But there's so much music that has such a rich sense of place, and is really feels rooted to me. And then I think about your life traveling, and I think on a daily basis, you don't necessarily, you know. You're traveling, you're wandering, you're sleeping in, you know, the van, the hotel, the different city every night. And I was curious about the intersection between rootlessness and being rooted for you as an artist.
Yeah, that's a problem. It's a conflict for sure. Because it's ironic because the more I sing about all of the things that I sing about, ranching and home and everything, the more successful I am singing about it, the less I do it. So, yeah, like, it's sad because I don't own a horse anymore. And I don't even own a cat. I'm never home. So,
yeah,
that's a good question. It has to be a balance. And I'm, you know, when you get, if you become big enough, you can, you know, pull it back a little bit. But I'm still at the phase of my career where I'm, you know, striving to spread the word about myself.
Yeah.
So it requires pretty much 110% commitment. I don't have any kids either. I don't have a. That's pretty much, I'm all in.
That's Cor Blund on his Western Destinations tour. You can see him tonight at Hay Camp Brewing Company in Rapid City. That's May 18th. On May 20th, he's at Big's Sports Bar and Billiards in Sioux Falls. We leave you now with a little bit of Cor Blund's September. This is from the Cabin Fever album. Stay in the Moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
Stay with me through September. Yeah, I know there ain't much to do. And I guess I did my share of starving in the city. I was young once too. Well, I can picture how you're living in a tiny fourth floor flat. Well, there's times that 1,000 acres and the Rocky Mountains can't compete with that. I know the flight's already booked, but I couldn't let you go and leave it like this without giving it a second look. Stay with me through September. Yeah, the pace is kinda slow, and there ain't much glamour on the old back quarter, babe. I guess I gotta let you go. Well, I can picture how you're living in a tiny fourth floor flat. I guess there's times and 1,000
And there ain't nobody in New York City could need you half as bad. I can picture how you live in a low